Have you been noticing this morning impatience, irritation, frustration, any of that family of things? Then it's not a mistake. If you haven't been experiencing impatience, frustration, it's also not a mistake. It's fine if you're also deepening into the stillness and tranquility. One thing that I would like us to reflect and discern a little bit more is what might be some of our old ideas and attitudes about what patience might mean, so that we can come into a sort of reevaluate what is actually real patience, not the facsimile of patience or the things that look like it but aren't quite like it, but what is actually patience when it's a kind of an effortless quality of staying with that which may appear to be difficult or unpleasant over a duration. So very briefly, I just want to touch on some of the things that might look like it but aren't, right? And so you can see those as they show up in the day to day or in your life. One thing, let's go to the other extreme first. Let's look at the opposite, which is kind of more obvious, the impatience. The places where we either get hot and pushy to try and push life along a little bit because it isn't quite going in the direction I want. It's not quite going fast enough. It's not quite unfolding according to my agenda. Or something gets in the way of what I imagine it should be happening in time, and I'm impatient with it. Yesterday I had a good example. I was teaching near Cardiff yesterday in Bridgend. So I stayed in Bristol the night, and my partner was going to drive me from Bristol to Bridgend in the morning. And so my agenda, because of course I had an agenda I was going to teach the day, was to be in Bridgend before 9:30 so that I could have a cup of tea and relax and meet the people and etc. We pulled in to get some diesel, and he came out from paying and he said, "Oh, we've got a flat tire." So one of the things we are impatient with often is the truth. Right? The truth was, we have a flat tire. My immediate response is, no, we don't. Right? There's this kind of initial thing, no, that can't be the truth. Why? Because I have to get to Bridgend by 9:30 and it's already 8:30 and we're in Bristol. So there's that initial impulse for many, many of us, and sometimes we don't get past that, of actually being impatient with the truth of the way things are. Does that ring a bell with anyone? It's not like this. And particularly because it wasn't hobbling, because it's not an old banger, it's a Citroen, which has quite nice suspension. You don't feel the kind of thunk of a flat tire immediately. So denying the truth is one of the ways impatience can show up. So then, okay, it is the truth, all right, but hurry up. Right? It is the truth we have a flat tire, but can you do it quickly? Or maybe we can just bypass and put some air in it. Okay, let's get to the air machine in the petrol station. Out of order. Aren't they always out of order? Right, and then, because actually what's happening, there's something hard to bear. My expectation of what should be unfolding has been met with a different reality. But still the momentum is there, still the push, still the self arising in time, trying to make it happen. And rather than being able to stop and recognize that, it's like, oh, wow, there's a suffering in impatience. It's actually very unpleasant. It's very painful. It's in the family of anger. It has the same quality to it. We're angry with the way things are. Instead of seeing that, what normally happens is it goes out. Petrol stations, they never have the air thing working. You know, what about people who've got important things to do? And you know, so that the mind goes out and starts to blame externally. Does that ring any bells? Right? So the air wasn't working, so okay, we have to change the tire. Okay, I'll be with it the way it is. Truth is, it's a flat tire. might be a bit late, but maybe we can get the flat tire on quickly, or the new tire on quickly. Go into the boot. We actually haven't had to take this out before, but there's all the stuff I've put in there to take to the charity shops. It's kind of all in the way. You know, things appearing to be in my way. Things, do you ever have that experience that it feels like things are in your way? And what are they in the way of? They're in the way of our momentum. We can't meet and move with and experience the truth, because when we do, we can actually respond. But when we're in reactivity, then you can't get the things out the boot, you know, and they're in the way, and you can't figure out how to get the tire down, because you don't just take it out now, you have to wind a thing and it comes out the bottom, and right, there's this kind of, and you may not be somebody who gets so hot and pushy, it may show up in a different way, but we want to explore that too. So we get the wheel brace out and the old wheel. Wheel brace isn't long enough to have a leverage to get the nuts off. Right? Rather than feeling the experience here and now, mine goes out. Who last put the wheel nuts on? Right? Oh, it was Ashburton tires. You know, why do they make things so difficult? Right? Mine goes out. Right? When the mind goes out and you lose contact with yourself, you can't respond anymore. You can only react. And then you kick the wheel brace, and then you kick the wheel nuts, and you curse Ashburton tires. And this is an extreme painting I'm doing. But we can lose contact with ourselves in those examples in many ways. Right? It may be that we don't turn out and the mind doesn't go to blame. It may be that we just freeze. And if we freeze, it's like, ugh, flat tire, I'm going to be late, can't deal with it. Right? We might freeze. Freezing from the outside might look like patience, because we're not kicking up a big fuss. But it's not patience, and we know that if we freeze, it's incredibly painful. It's incredibly debilitating. We've lost contact with our ability to respond. So freezing is one thing that happens. It's just too overwhelming. Too overwhelming to be with what's here, so I clamp and I freeze. And there's different versions of that. There's the kind of grinning and bearing it. Right? Okay, I'm a meditation teacher. I'm supposed to be patient, right? Okay. Or we have it as a spiritual yardstick to measure ourselves by. So I'm supposed to be patient, right? But because I'm not, I have to at least look like I'm patient, so I can do a kind of fake holy version of patience, which, oh yeah, flat tire. But inside there's this kind of churning and bubbling and, you know, all the rest of it. There's a very nice example in a book I've used before. There's an anthropology book that came out a couple of years ago about English behaviour called Watching the English. If you've seen it, it's very nice to read, very insightful actually, very funny, and a little bit close to the bone of just some of the habits of different cultures, but in this case it's English behaviour. And she's an English anthropologist, and what she's talking about is that tendency English people have not to complain. Maybe it's changing now. which, of course, on the surface can look like patience. But on the stereotype of that behaviour is that you hate the service, you hate the restaurant, you hate the salad dressing, and you just don't say anything, but never go there and tell all your friends how horrible it is. Right? It's not patience. Patience doesn't necessarily mean we don't respond. Patience doesn't necessarily mean we don't speak out. It might do. But we need to know from the inside if it's really contactful presence. If we're really staying with what is arising. Even if what it is being patient with our impatience. impatience, patience does not have to mean that what's arising is pretty. Patience is the forbearance, the gentleness, the kindness, the compassion, the steadiness, the steadfastness, the perseverance, the wisdom that can stay with what is arising when it's difficult, even if it's impatience, which may not be valued by the ordinary mind. We have a lot of value these days, particularly in efficiency and accomplishment and doing things to time, which in and of itself is not a problem. But we're so used to things happening quickly and quicker and quicker and quicker. Now I've actually got a computer that's supposed to go quickly, and now it's not working very well. I press the button and it doesn't immediately come up with the website because something's gone wrong with it and I haven't fixed it. And, you know, it should be different. It should be different. So that our lives can get into a rhythm of an agenda where things are supposed to happen according to how they're supposed to happen. And that gap between the way things are and the way I think things should be is the gap of suffering. Always. The way things are and the way things should be, according to the gospel, according to Catherine. Right? According to me. Sometimes we think patience isn't such a good idea because we've had old memories of things that looked like it but weren't. Where we think patience may be becoming passive or being a doormat, or where our will has not been respected, that we somehow patience is associated with defeat or being crushed. But that's not patience either. There's many more things that look like patience but aren't, and maybe you'll discover those during the day. And you might discover some of the nuances of impatience too that are there for you. And one of the places to watch is the impatience with ourselves for things not unfolding quick enough. My meditation. So today, the impatience with myself for things not being how I want them to be. One woman yesterday in Bridgend, she said, after a few hours of being here, she said, "Oh, I'm just realizing I've come with an expectation." Right? I was at the last day long, however long ago it was, and by the end of the day, I was really happy and open and spacious and insightful, and that's what I thought was going to happen when I came to the day long. And this was sort of about now, actually. She said, "I'm not. I'm tight, I'm frustrated, my body hurts." But it takes us a while. She goes, "Oh, I realize there's a gap between my expectation and what's actually the truth." Right? I don't want this to be the truth. I don't want to have a flat tire. I don't want to have a sore belly and a frustrated mind. But actually, this is the experience right now. And as she said that, the gap closed. It's like, ah, dropping the expectation in time, coming into experience as it is. It's not how I want it. Ah, but a big relief to come into contact with what's true. And from there, our life unfolds. Not from me pushing to get to Bridgend, or for her trying to be open and spacious. Have you ever tried to be open and spacious? Right? Trying to be peaceful and calm. It's a setup. But we do it. That's what we bring to meditation, because that's the way we know how to do things. Especially if we're someone efficient in our life. Yeah, I can do this with a meditation. but doesn't work according to the same principles, luckily. Right? It's much more interesting. So today, noticing any of that territory, and more we'll get to later. So I'll take some time now for anybody who is new or relatively new, or feels new. Anybody's welcome. We'll meet in the second room and see if there's any questions or things to clarify. It can be from posture to technique to anything you like. For the rest, take some time for walking, staying steady with the practice, noticing the mind arising in its various forms, and keeping faith with that steadiness of foot landing in the earth. And we'll meet back. Somebody will ring the bell and invite us back in. Okay. If you're coming to the group, maybe you could leave first so that we can begin promptly. Okay, so here's a true story for you about patience. This was, I think, maybe 15 or so years ago, 15, 20 years ago, when His Holiness the Dalai Lama was meeting with some of the Western teachers in our lineage and some of the other Buddhist lineages. And these were, so this is sort of my teacher's generation, if you like. And they were the people, you know, who'd come for, had done a lot of practice in Asia and had dedicated their life to practice and were now teaching and had been doing it for 20 years or more, some of these kind of, you know, long amount of time, worthy of veneration. And one of the senior teachers said to the Dalai Lama, So I've been practicing 20 years and I still have this particular difficulty happening in my practice, and you know, what can I do? And apparently the Dalai Lama threw his arms back and said, oh, it's like that in the beginning. It's like that in the beginning. And if you can just feel the quality of that mind that comes from, just for a moment, maybe you get a little taste for that. It's like, oh, what would it be like to have this vision of unfoldment of practice that is wide, that is unhurried, that the joy isn't in the arrival but in the discovery, that it's like that in the beginning? Because we can get very serious and focused on my particular things that are unfolding, and that's important. We do need to take care of that very much. But this big vista, this big vision of time, it's like, right? Because I think some of us might fear this big vision of time, because then I'm actually not going to pay attention. I'll just kind of get lost in the soup of drudgery, or, you know, some of us feel we need the urgency to actually get to it. Because in the tradition, we do also very much have this reflections on urgency, right? We reflect on death. We reflect on death as a means to wake us up now. It's like this life isn't actually all that long. It's rapidly petering out, right? Not as a view to become depressed about that, but as a view to say, how do I want to use it? How do I want to, what do I want to cultivate here? What on my deathbed will I wish I'd cultivated? Right? So we have that, and that can give us an urgency and a certain fire. But can we hold that together with this big, relaxed vista of, it's like that in the beginning? Well, we can also breathe out. It's like the urgency lets us breathe in. Yes, this moment is precious. It is relevant. I do want to dedicate my life to waking up, what if we do, right? With this, relax. What's the hurry? What's the hurry? It's really my agenda that says I shouldn't still be experiencing that issue because I've worked on it and it's still here. And what does patience look like with that in mind? So over lunchtime, I give you the part of the teaching that has to do with the long enduring mind. Time spreads out. I think that's one of the benefits of a cosmology, whether you adhere to it or like it or not, but a cosmology that has this view of many lifetimes. Kind of, ah. Oh. We can see the downside. Then it could make us passive. Could make us. But it doesn't have to. And we don't need to have that cosmology to have this long enduring mind. We don't have to adhere to that. But we might want to at least put a very healthy question mark and doubt beside our time schedule of how things should unfold. If you reflect on how much evolution experiences from, if you like this story, it's another story, from the Big Bang to the life forms emerging, to there being enough conditions for mammals, to there being human type beings. All these causes and conditions forever and ever, really, really, really long time, till finally your mother and your father and that sperm and that egg, and then this little one called me. Right? Whoa, took a lot to get here. Why am I in such a hurry? You know? Just kind of stretch out to that big vista. Still with the interest to wake up. But how do we hold ourselves? How do we hold ourselves in the queue for lunch in a minute? Right? When we might be hungry, maybe we had breakfast early, or maybe our tummy's rumbling now. How do we hold ourselves in the queue for lunch when there may be some hunger, there may be some anxiety, am I going to get enough, am I going to... All of that might be there. Taking care of that, being warm, being letting ourselves meet that, but having this long enduring mind. So I invite that as a possibility of the one Zen master, I don't remember his name, who practiced diligently for the first 80 years of his life and then taught for the next 40. It's kind of, oh. Right, and then we want to make it all happen on a Sunday morning and get frustrated that we can't. Why aren't I calm and spacious and at ease right now? And we may not even have that thought. It might just be, I don't like what my experience is, which is maybe painful body, maybe sore heart, maybe fragmented mind, or maybe no feeling, no interest. Distant, disappeared. Can we start to recognize the truth of whatever is this moment's experience? And give ourselves plenty of room. And that's the place where things move and unfold. So as patience as our theme, noticing what that may reveal to you over lunchtime. Has anybody ever been impatient on a London retreat day in the queue for lunch? Hands up. No, don't have to. Right? So can we be patient with the impatience? It's like, oh goody, impatience is here. This is a perfect opportunity for me to study this thing. That's one possibility. Oh, okay, this is what impatience is like. Mind goes external to the blame. Hurry up, hurry up. Who do you think you are trying to be so slow? You know, whatever it may do. Ah, it's a flag for something arising here and now that is hard to bear. And that's what dukkha is. Something arising here and now that is hard to bear. Often we're hovering just above it. We don't want to bear it. We want to make the conditions otherwise. We're hovering just above it, and we recognize it finally. Oh, it's impatience. Or it's frozen. I'm frozen. I'm so overwhelmed in this queue. Right? Checking out to see if there's any of that nice ratatouille left and whatever it might be. Oh, it's all going. You know, I'm so overwhelmed by what's happening in the queue that I just close off. Or, oh, here I am doing my fake holy. It's like, oh, yes, all is well. Ratatouille or not, it's all the same to me. Right? And that might be genuine. It may be really genuine. You may be resting in a certain equanimity where pleasant or unpleasant aren't the defining characteristic of our experience. But more often, on a day-to-day situation for many of us at different times of day, contact with pleasant and unpleasant is what defines us when the mind is untrained. Contact with something unpleasant, hard to bear, we move off into desire and aversion, and off we go. We've completely lost contact with the here and now. We don't even value the here and now because it's unpleasant. What was all that stuff about here and now? Why would I want to be here and now? It's cold. Cold food. Now I'm in a long queue. But if we have some sense from our own experience, which probably you do if you've ever come back to meditation, some sense of the value of trading candy for gold, then this queue is not imposed on you from outside. This queue is something I'm taking this on as a practice ground to see what is arising. Where does the mind go when faced with pleasant and unpleasant? When I can no longer just escape from the forces of desire and aversion? Can I breathe with me? Can I feel my feet on the ground? Can I meet myself with kindness and patience? And then see what happens. So I'll stop there for that reflection. So before the Buddha and his monks and nuns had come up with the Vinaya, which, if you know the tradition, is the code of conduct, the training precepts which the monks and nuns take on, and there are many. Before that evolved, and it evolved mostly in response to unskillful things that they were doing that weren't helping their practice, so the Buddha said, oh, it's not a good idea to do that. And then it came another rule. Before that evolved, apparently the training precept was be patient. Right, that's what the instruction was. And the power of it is something we cannot value and very often underestimate. But it's seen as having an incredible not only strength but also protective capacity. And when we really know true patience, it's strength, the Buddha talks about, is like Brahma's armies. It has that kind of strength to it. So again, very different than sometimes what we think of as this sort of passive acceptance. In the tradition also, there's kind of three areas that are talked about with regard to patience. One is around perseverance, so an aspect of patience as perseverance, kind of gentle and steady effort. So we just keep going. Even when practice doesn't meet our expectations, and when our life doesn't meet our expectations. I have one friend and colleague who's done many, many years of practice, and she said sometimes there'd be periods in her practice where nothing seemed to be happening. She wasn't getting any insights, she didn't seem to be getting any wiser. Certainly didn't get calmer, and she wondered, you know,
what's going on here? And she said, afterwards, in retrospect, we can sometimes see, she said, what she saw was that kind of via the back door, this strengthening quality of patience was being deepened. It wasn't what she wanted to be happening. Probably wanted more fireworks or, you know, insight or something juicy. Patience doesn't really hold that to our, for our personality. It's not quite so juicy. But that this was what was being steadily cultivated through that perseverance and endurance. Another part that is documented is patience under insult. There's lots of verses where the Buddha talks about so-and-so insults you and he who follows the way of non-patience insults them back. It's more or less the gist of it. The kind of thing we know very well, probably. Right. But patience under insult, which is very interesting. In fact, you can see places in history where that has come from a real strong connection with a spiritual strength, that patience under insult, like in the civil rights movement, for example, emotional, physical insult, it wasn't a collapsing back, it wasn't a giving up. It was a kind of a steadfast connection with something much deeper that allowed, with that patient perseverance, something deeper to emerge. Something that we can really connect to. And I think sometimes some of us fear that if we're patient under insult, that we kind of feel bullied or that we're not standing up for ourselves. But there are many ways to stand up for ourselves. So patience is part of the aspect that allows us to really stand up for ourselves. But it may not be responding in that knee-jerk response. And then the third one is the patience that has to do with the acceptance of the truth. I spoke a bit about that earlier. Okay, it is a flat tire. Right. This morning in the hotel I was in, actually before I tell you that, I'll tell you the definitions from the English language. Like, party patience comes from a Latin word which means to suffer. I know, it's like, oh crumbs, here they are again, those Buddhists going on about suffering. But if we want to understand happiness and the causes of happiness, we really also need to go to the roots of where the suffering is, to really fathom that. So in English, there's five definitions. One is bearing trials calmly. The second is manifesting forbearance under provocation. It's a little bit like that. Patience under insult. The third one is not hasty or impetuous. The fourth is steadfast despite opposition. And the fifth, which has to do with my story, is good-natured tolerance of delay or incompetence. Isn't that nice? So this morning in the hotel, it's very nice still. Still very... Sorry, we can do it. We can do some patient forbearance. So still, there's still a kind of an excitement when I get to stay in a hotel. It's put on for me by London Retreat. So there I was in Hampstead, and in a premier inn, and it's very simple, very nice, something to eat, went to bed, got up. And I have my schedule to get here for this morning, and then I put the shower on and I needed to wash my hair, but there was no hot water. Right, no hot water. And so, okay, you leave it for a bit, don't you? And then the hot water comes. Sometimes it's cold and takes a while. So I waited and I waited and I waited. Kind of saw the irony of teaching a day about patience and the shower didn't. Still didn't get warm, still didn't get warm. And then there's the kind of that what happens with what we could call delay or incompetence. What we're calling somebody's done something wrong here, you know. and it's Hampstead and it's London, it costs lots of money and it really ought to work. You know, all those things of... But actually realizing, because patience was on the map for me today, and that's where it's useful to sometimes to bring those qualities forth. It's like it's on the map again. It's like, oh yes, patience, I remember. Yes, I still need to have my shower. Yeah, I call reception and all of that happens. But rather than perhaps the knee-jerk responses of who's to blame and the incompetence that shouldn't be here, I might expect that somewhere else, but not when you're paying lots of money in London. You know. But instead, there was the capacity to not just wait and bear things out, to act, to respond, to get what needed to happen to happen, with a kind of an interest, a kind of this is a little bit where the passion comes in, kind of a quiet curiosity of the irony. Okay, here is a perfect opportunity for me to practice what I preach, right? To really see what it means, what does it mean in this moment to be really here, to be deeply connected with myself, with whatever's there. There might be that, oh, but I might not be ready and my hair won't be clean and you know, all of the things that might move through. But to not, for one moment, budge from staying connected. Because the deepest pain is when we move away, we quit, we leave the scene. We go up into the head and all our ideas and excuses and complaints about the world come. And we've lost contact with actually ourselves. And that really is the most painful part. So just as a possibility, if we do start to value it, where we've let go of our old ideas of what patience, what may not have been real patience, let go of those, we're re-evaluating what is it actually, then we may or may not be inspired by Shantideva, where he says, if because of my own shortcomings I do not practice patience with my enemy, and here in this case it was Premier Inn, it is not he but I who prevents me from practicing patience. Right? If because of my own shortcomings I do not practice patience with my enemy, it is not he but I who prevents me from practicing patience. Who is actually suffering? Where is the suffering? Premier Inn weren't suffering. The girls on reception weren't suffering. The suffering in that moment of the shower not working is what's generated here and now. And the possibility of seeing, okay, this is a moment where I might learn something. The moment when we're in the supermarket queue and we're either sort of with our trolley looking for the shortest queue and kind of gathering our muscles and making a dash for the shortest queue, which might be appropriate at times, you know, maybe appropriate. But can we stay connected? Are we taking care of our heart and mind in that moment? Or the other opportunity in the queue, we're not kind of mustering our fighting spirit, then we kind of check out until it's our turn, kind of space out in the queue as if we're powerless, as if our life will begin again once I've paid for my shopping. And then we kind of leave and quit the scene. This period between now, five back in the queue, and when I pay for my shopping, that period has no value whatsoever. And that really is a tragedy, where we go through life with these big gaps. I don't value this portion. It doesn't seem to be offering me anything. My life begins when X happens. Once I'm back home, once I've fill in the blank, whatever it would be for you. And we want to see where those gaps are also in our practice. Maybe we're doing walking practice and it's a little boring perhaps, and then we come up into the head and life begins again once the bell has gone. That's when life begins. If I just kind of bide my time, look like I'm doing it, whatever it might be. I can even look patient, you know, there I am. But life begins when the bell goes. And what a tragedy to keep postponing our life, to postpone our deepening, to postpone the capacity to really wake up and find not only the acceptance of what's true, but even the love of what's true. So let's do a walking practice together. And the way I want to do this is, if we move the things on the cushions to the edges of the room, and we move the chairs back so we have a big empty space for us, and then just stand and I'll guide us in that.